This is Cooper Westendyke, and you guys are listening to the Payers and Players Podcast.
Welcome to episode 94 of the Payers and Players Podcast. My name is Robert. I'm here with Scott. We've got a great guest for today. Before we dive into today's episode, if you would go follow us on Twitter at Payers Players. Also, we've got a bunch of subscribers on there. We appreciate all of our subscribers. We put a bunch of content on there for subscribers only. So if you appreciate the content we're doing, especially some of the research that Scott does, we'd appreciate you following us and then subscribing on Twitter. So Scott, you want to dive into today's guest?
Sure. Today we have one of the top-ranked juniors in the world, Cooper Westendyke. He grew up in Kansas City, and he's now making a name for himself on the ITF Tour. He recently made the quarterfinals of the Australian Open, and he's back in the U.S. training at the USTA, so we're happy to have Cooper with us to talk about his junior tennis career.
Yeah. Thank you, guys, and thank you very much for having me today.
Appreciate it. Let's start off with a few quick questions, just one of those this or that format. So, Robert, if you want to interchange with me, we'll start, get it kicked off. So, Cooper, ad or no ad?
I'm going to say ad.
Okay. Full third sets or a match tiebreaker?
Full third.
Full third, I like it. Doubles, are you ad side or deuce side?
Ad side all day.
Let's see, inside out forehand or inside in forehand?
Inside out.
I like it. And last one, indoor or outdoor?
Indoor.
All right, really? So you got to let me ask a few. So ITF or USTA?
ITF.
Why?
Because ITF is where you play Grand Slams.
Yeah. So do you like the format, just the one match per day and no consolation?
I like the one match per day aspect. I think the consolation is good, though. It's more match play. I like that aspect of USTA.
Yeah, it'd be nice if ITF did have that. They have at least one round of consolation, because it is hard to go someplace and maybe just play one match and then you're done.
Yeah, it's tough. You kind of just got to set up your stuff on your own everywhere when you travel.
Yeah. Sorry, Robert.
No worries. So Chiefs or Royals?
Chiefs.
Right. Kansas or Kansas State?
Kansas all day.
Oh, all right. Controversy here at the beginning.
Rock check, Jayhawk. Yeah.
All right, so let's jump. Oh, go ahead, Scott.
No, I was gonna say, let's just jump into it. Just interested in your tennis background and your family. How did you guys get involved in tennis? And do you have your parents play, or were they coaches or anything?
Yeah. So my mom did not. She played high school tennis very little. She played basketball in college. And my dad played tennis. He played 2 years at Illinois State, and then he transferred to a D2 in Kansas, Washburn. And that's where he met my mom and played his last 2 years there. So he was a player, and he grew up coaching me. And so when I was little, I played pretty much all sports, and I was just a really, really competitive kid. So I played a lot of sports. I was a big basketball guy when I was younger. I played, my main three, I would say, were basketball, baseball, and tennis. And as the years went by, I just got better and better at tennis, and compared to my peers, got a little worse at the other ones.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like your dad went from being a player to being a payer, so that's interesting.
Yeah. So he coached me. But he was working in business. He had a job, like a stocks job about COVID, and then he retired so he could travel with me a little more. And then I started training more in Orlando, but I stayed in the dorms. So he wasn't down here with me. And now he is coaching tennis in Kansas to some other kids as well. He's coaching at where the Kansas women's tennis facility is. So.
Okay, in Lawrence, Kansas?
Yes, yeah.
Got it.
So, go ahead, Robert.
I was just going to ask real quick. Tell me, at what point did you make the transition from Kansas down to the USTA? Was it right there about 2020?
No, it was probably – I started going more in I would say late 2021, but I was still very little at USTA. And then I would say the past closing in on 2 years has been when I've been at USTA pretty much full
Now,
time.
who would
Yeah, so
you
like
credit? Who would you credit with your development? Was it more your dad than anything, or is there a facility you went to that you got a lot out of? Who would you give the primary credit for your development?
the credit would it would go to my dad,
Got it.
because so I grew up going to some different academies. There were some different ones in Kansas I went to with good coaches that I worked with there. But I mean, my dad knew me better than anyone, and I would always work with him individually every day, every night. We talk about tennis. So yeah, all the credit goes to him, and he's done a great job with me. Yeah,
Yeah, got it.
obviously can't argue with that. And so, when did you start playing tournaments, and did you play any of the little Mo tournaments?
I played, can't remember if it was 1 or 2 years. I never made it that far. I made it to like I did all the qualifying ones and made it to the final one. And then I don't know. I only played 1 year in like the big little Mo, but I lost first round, I believe, and then went decent in the consolation. But
And was this
yeah.
when you were like 8 or 9?
Yeah, I think I was like 9 or something. So
Okay.
I was like decent, but nothing like I would say out of the ordinary, like unbelievable. But I was still good.
Yeah. And then you started to, like, say, so then I guess you transitioned over to the USTA tournaments at 10, 11,
Yeah.
12, and started to have some good results, at that point.
Yeah, for sure. In the 12s, I had good results. Got like a good amount of balls at L1s. Like got a good amount in 12s. I was
Wow.
pretty good player. I think I made the finals of indoors, finals of Easter Bowl, in singles, and then I won a couple of the doubles ones. But
And
yeah, so in 12s, sorry.
you talk about your game at that age. Why were you successful at that age? Was it your game style, maybe your size? What sort of set you apart?
Yeah, so when I was younger, I was still pretty tall, for my age. But I didn't really attack a lot. I was pretty smart with how I did it. I didn't hit the ball huge. I would say a pretty smart player. I knew when to take the ball early. I stood pretty close to the baseline and kind of just dictated around, moved the ball around the court, and then snuck in at times I could. But yeah, I would say I just made a lot of balls and was pretty smart with how I played. Yeah.
I think that's the key at that age, right?
Yeah, at that age, that's all you need to do.
It's surviving the first
Exactly.
four and just outlasting your opponent. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I mean, from that age, like when I was about 14, like I still had good success in 14. I started hitting a little bigger, but when I started coming down to USTA, they noticed I needed to change my game up a little bit to have a little bigger style of the game, because you got to again in the high level ITFs and against the better and better players.
Yeah, I want to dive in that here in a little bit, but before we do, you mentioned going to multiple academies in Kansas, and what made your decision to switch between them? And if you were to give some advice to the facilities on what they were doing well and what they did poorly, what would you say? And one of the things I think, like, did you like having more kids on each court? Did you prefer less kids per court and
Match
more
play.
individualized? Yeah, more match play. Give some, at the point you're at now, if there's a facility director or a coach listening, what advice would you give there?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I started out like just kind of fluctuating between places because some places were further from me, some weren't. And then I switched to this club called Genesis Health Clubs, and I was there for about 3 years, I would say. And the reason I chose to go there was they had less players on a court than some other places. And I liked the drills they were doing more than the other places. I felt at the time it was a lot more live ball and point play. And that's kind of what I needed. So it was a lot more stuff like that. Which was very good for my development. But if I had to give advice to like other directors of tennis at different clubs, I would say, if you do the best you can of getting, for the high performance programs, do the best you can of getting as least people on the court as possible, because that's going to help the kids' development the most. If you have 8 or 6 people on a court and you're like rotating through drills and basket feeds and that type of stuff, it's going to be tough for the player if they don't put in that extra work outside of like those groups, which I did a lot of extra work outside the programs and stuff. And I would say, just if you just give the kids a chance to show their true potential by playing points and being competitive and playing different types of games, that would be my advice.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, and so when you say you did some extra work, so I assume that, you know, what you're talking about, you know, when you do those clinics or, you know, group lessons at, say, a Genesis from, say, 4 to 6 with, you know, the drills they have, were you staying afterwards and working with your dad, or was it before school, or were you not going to school and you could work during the day to get the extra time in? How were you getting that extra time in?
Yeah, so it kind of switched between, like, I started towards the end of my public school, career. I started ending school a little early so I could try to get out at like 1 and then go and try to get on the court from 2 to 4 and then hit from 2 to 4 and then go to the 4 to 6. And then sometimes I would stay after. I was kind of a lot different than a lot of other people. I was on the courts nonstop. Thinking about it, it was probably too much. But I played like so many hours a day, which obviously helps. So I would normally try to get a hit for like 2 hours, at least 2 hours a day, besides those group sessions. Or I would do like a lesson or hit with my dad for like an hour, hour and a half, and then have those group sessions. Because I feel like you need that extra work to work on your game outside of the group sessions, because the group sessions are more like different types of games and like doubles drills, and because you got more players, you got to do that. So you got to work on your own game. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes sense. They're fun, but if you really want to sharpen your own personal game, you also got to have that time for yourself. And, so go ahead. Yeah.
No. And like, as you get older, you start to realize that more, like, because when I was younger, of course you want to do the fun stuff. And then once I started getting better, I was like, oh, I realize I need some of this other stuff. So maybe these drills, they're not going to even benefit me as much. So I want to put in a lot more dedicated work outside of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Those drills and those, you know, group lessons, they're necessary, but they're not sufficient. So you've got to do more than just that, because you can't rely on that. And that's the problem that a lot of kids have, is if they're going to school, they don't have time, and then they just go to the group, and then that's all they do. And then they wonder why they're not getting better, and they don't see the extra work that you guys are putting in to get to that next level.
Exactly.
For sure.
Yeah. And Cooper, you know, you are a result. The level of player you've become is what every facility hopes to produce, or are at least working towards producing. And there's a lot of philosophies on how do we provide for a talented player like Cooper so that he gets to his max. And I liked your advice. Give us one more piece of advice for facilities and pros. That was a good one. You mentioned live ball. You mentioned small groups. Give us one more thing.
Yeah. I would say, like, it depends on the player scenario. But, like, for me, I had my dad that was coaching me. And I had a really – there was, like, one coach that played, like, in, I would say, a decent – like, even all the coaches there played an important role in my in my career. So I would do like privates with them, or set up hitting sessions just with the coaches, because they were good. They were better than the players. And then they would help me work on my game. I would get good hits with them. And I would say they dedicated a lot of time during the group sessions to focusing on me, like focusing on what I was doing good.
Got it. So they found a way to make it individualized, even though it was a big group.
Exactly. If I'm just out there and there's no coach out there and I'm just hitting and stuff, you can coach yourself, but to a certain point, you sometimes can't see everything you're doing. So you need someone out there. And I feel like they did a good job of that, of making, and it also, if you're a good player, it makes you feel good as well. If you get that attention.
Yeah. Well, I know you mentioned your dad. Is there one or other two coaches that you want to give kudos to here publicly? And it's okay if not. Just try to give you an opportunity.
No, there was I would say a lot of credit goes to my dad, and then there's almost too many coaches. Because I worked with so many at I would say I got to give credit to Genesis Health Clubs though, like good. The one in Overland Park, Kansas, because all the coaches there did a great job with me.
Great.
Yeah.
And were there any players in the Kansas City area that you sort of looked up to that maybe have been, that might've been like a mentor or just somebody that a couple years older than you that was, you know, doing really well that you sort of looked up to that may have given you some advice or given you something to shoot for?
Yeah, it was tough because even when I was young, I was always at the same level or better than pretty much every kid in Kansas.
Right.
So it was kind of tough, but you guys probably know this guy. He was one of my best friends when I was in Kansas. I was hitting with him like every day once he moved. He goes to Louisville now. His name's Russell Loco.
Okay, great. Yeah, we know Russell. I know Russell.
Yes.
Yeah,
so he was a big factor in like, we got some great sessions and me and him set up some great hits together. Like he would drive me around, we would go hit at a public park and then go and do the group sessions indoors. So we did a lot of that pretty much every day, which was big for, I would say, both of us. He improved a lot, when we were training every day. So I thought like having someone like that in your life, and there was always older kids I would hit with, but it would just be a more mixture. But having someone like that, that always improves. Like having someone that's older, because he always taught me things, even though like I might have, like we would go back and forth and I might beat him. But it's important.
Yeah, I think that's right. And like I say, one of the fortunate things about being here in Louisville is we have some access to some of the Louisville players. And my son hits a lot with Will Mayhew, who you probably know Ian.
Yep.
But he hits with Will a lot. And Will's just such a great guy in terms of providing mentorship and, you know, obviously a great hit, but it's also letting you know what you got to do to get to the next level, what you've got to improve on and how you've got to play and how you can behave and everything. So I think it's a really good tool to use for junior players is to find somebody a year or two older, 2 or 3 years older that you can, you know, hit with that will also be someone there to give you guidance. So that's smart.
Yeah. Peer sure. Mentor, slightly a little bit older.
Yeah,
it's real important. So Cooper, tell me this, you mentioned that then you go to USTA and you get there and you're playing a little more consistent game and they want you to dictate and use weapons more. Yeah. How did they get you to do that?
So my coach when I moved to USTA at the time was John Glover. And at the
time, we know John.
Yeah.
And shout out to John. We tried to get him on the podcast. Would love to have him on. Go ahead.
Yeah. Love John. He's still here. It's great to see him every day. But he was maybe one of the best things in my up there and one of the best things in my tennis career that could have happened to me. Because of his mind and his coaching style. So I was pretty consistent from the baseline, liked to dictate from the baseline. I kind of just made balls up both wings and pushed my opponents around. And his coaching philosophy is there's a lot of mental things which I needed work with, and a lot of coming to the net and volley technique and different stuff like that, which was very big for me. So when I got there, it was a lot. It was almost about flipping the way I played and in practice being ultra aggressive, trying to come to the net as much as possible. And at the same time, I was needed to work on my volley technique and my legs getting down low and how to cover the net. So there was a lot about that with how I worked with him. And I still use all the stuff he's saying to this day. And he was very, very persistent on getting that everyday work in, like every day, get on the wall, hit volleys, hit half volleys, get low. And then we had like routines with that. So that was very big. And pretty much when I moved to USTA, I would say that was the biggest thing, trying to find more forehands and come to the net more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. That's the way the bigger game is played. You find your forehand and you turn it into a weapon and then you finish at the net. Yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
And, you know, so when you got there, you say you worked with John Glover. Does he work with a particular age group, and then you graduate to a new coach? Or, you know, how did your coaching change as you've been there?
Yeah, so it fluctuates with USTA. It kind of depends on how that birth year is doing. They do stuff mm-hmm. by birth year, and like how the results wise the kids are doing. And it's over my pay grade. I do not know how the decisions are made. So basically, John was my coach, or like he was the coach of my age group from 2020. He might have been before that, but I wasn't with USTA. Like 2020 to 2020. To January of 2023. And then last year, I moved from John. Mm-hmm. And I was with Sylvain Guichard. He was he's a very good coach. And I was with him last year. He's worked with pros, worked with like high level players. He was a really good coach. And this year I had another coaching switch, and I'm with Mario Rincone, who is former Miami head coach for a long time, former Louisville assistant, and he's first year like as a national coach.
Scott knows him well.
Yeah, Mario was a big loss for Louisville. He was a star player at the University of Kentucky, and then he, like you say, he coached at Miami, and then he was here at Louisville for a few years, and huge loss to the program, huge loss to the city. But your gain, and Mario's a great guy, and I saw Mario last weekend, and I mentioned that we're going to have you on the show, and he had two questions for you. So the first question is, how did you get 13 pairs of shoes to Australia?
Oh, wow. Yeah, so when I was in Australia, my company, K-Swiss, sent me 13. They got 13 pairs of shoes. I think there were some extras maybe. Hey, I got a lot of shoes, so nothing to complain about there. But I had to go like Uber and get a bag. Like hopefully like a store had like a travel bag that was big enough for me to, or a suitcase that was big enough for those shoes to bring back. Luckily it worked out perfectly. I Ubered there, got the suitcase, came back, all the shoes fit. So yeah, that was a little crazy situation. I'm glad it worked out.
And what about Scott, man? Scott's going to always bring some good questions like that. That's some good research, Scott. Go ahead. What's the second one? I can't wait to hear it.
Well, the second one is Mario wanted to know, why did you go to Colombia right after Australia and not go home?
Yeah, that was tough. So first of all, I have like one of my dad's best friends is from Colombia and I know him. And so I was like, okay, like I'm going to feel comfortable going there. And part of that decision also was when I got to Australia, I felt no jet lag. Like I didn't feel any jet lag really. But I felt it on the way back, coming back from it. So I struggled in Colombia. Like there is actually funny, crazy story. Before my first round, I've been there for a couple days and, I woke up in the morning, did my normal routine, and was in the gym about like 10 o'clock. And at 10 o'clock, I was like, oh, I'm feeling terrible. My head was hurting like really bad. And then I'm like walking back to my room. I was like, I need to like relax because I played around like one or two. And I'm like walking back to my room. I start like full out sweating. I'm like feeling terrible. And I'm like, okay, I need to lay down. And I laid down and my match was at two or like, it was, I was third on and I woke up at like 1:30 or 1:45 and I thought I was screwed. Like I thought I'd been called already. My match has already been like done. And thankfully I got in time. Like the match was like, I had to like run over to the site. Like I missed my warm up. My warm up partner like called me like five times, missed my warm up. And the match when I got there was like a set and a break in. So I got there like very little time. I did about like a 5 minute hit before my match and then played. But that was, I don't know if that was from like a virus from like some of the food I ate in Colombia or some jet lag. I think it was a mixture of the two.
Yeah.
Course, everybody wants to know how'd the match go, obviously.
I won that match. Like, I won that match, I think, like 0-1 in like 45 minutes, which was good. Like I played.
Then there's a new routine. Then you got to incorporate that.
Exactly, routine. Exactly. I got to do that before every match. Yeah, I played a Colombian wild card, so it wasn't a bad draw there. But yeah, I struggled that tournament, and then I actually got an injury. So I won my round after that, made the quarters, and then I got a little injured in my quarterfinal match, and have been out since then. But yeah, that was a little funny story. But the jet lag, that was tough. It was. I wouldn't say I would do it again. But I didn't know. You gotta learn.
Cooper, what kind of injury?
Yeah, so I'm okay now. I had a little ab injury. I've had ab injuries in the past. It's like from either overuse or like I'm opening up on my serve a little too much, and using a lot of the ab. So I had to rest it for a couple weeks. But I'm playing a tournament this upcoming week, so I'm not feeling it. I'm playing sets, so I feel good to go. Yeah.
And were you?
You gotta take those serious.
Or were you playing this week?
Yeah, you do. I'm playing Indian Well, the Masters 1000 qualifying in Palm Springs. Yeah, so it's a big tournament. Yeah,
for sure, that's awesome. And one more question, just to end the Mario Rincon portion of the show. What is one thing that Mario's maybe given to you as something that you've taken as advice, or is one thing that he's really focused on, and something that's maybe he specifically has had you work on?
Yeah. With Mario, it was a pretty quick turnaround before Australia. So I didn't get to work with him too much before he went. And then like we were working every day there, but I would say the biggest thing with me he's been working on is a lot of energy and positivity in the mind during matches, which is great. He's like one of the kindest and most positive guys I've met. Yep. And it's been fantastic working with him, and he has definitely helped me, and he's helped me with that. And I would say that's why I won all three, or my first three matches in Australia, because I wouldn't even say I played that well, but I was so mentally solid and so positive during those matches that I found ways to get through them. And I would say that's probably one of the biggest things. And he's also working with me on trying to, whenever you see the ball short in the court, you take it early and come in. That's one of his biggest things with me. Yeah.
Yeah. And just for the people that don't know, your first three matches in Australia were all three setters. So they're all
matches. First one was 6-2 in the third, and then the other two were 7-5 in the third.
And what was the common theme in those 7-5 matches?
The common themes were,
well, your opponent double faulted on match point both matches.
Yeah, they did. I mean, just hope for a double fault on match point.
Right, that's right. Good, positive thinking. Yeah,
I would say honestly, like the tighter the situation it gets, the more you got to put the ball in the court. That like that goes along with the double faults, but it's like. Yeah. In those return games, I broke both games at 6-5, and like you got to put the ball on the court. Like I did a good job putting returns in, and then putting balls in, making my opponent play.
Right.
And it's a tough situation to do. Like I've had to serve out and try to serve in to stay in matches so many times, and it's a very tough thing to do. To do that. Like in my last match, I was up 5-3 serving in the third, and I couldn't get it done, but. But yeah, it's make the ball. That's make the ball and run. That's what Sylvain said. That's what you got to do in tennis.
Yeah.
Well, so tell us, Scott's got a good question here in our document that we're sharing. You played and won Kalamazoo 16s last year.
Mm-hmm.
Why skip the 18s?
So I was pretty much playing all ITFs. Last year, I did a South America swing, did a Europe swing, like played Roland Garros, played Wimbledon. And honestly, it was a tough year for me. Like, it was tough. I had like I had some decent results, but I had a lot of more first round losses than I ever had in my life.
Right.
And so I was struggling. I was struggling a decent amount. And especially going into Kalamazoo, I felt like I needed something. So I talked. I was always planning on playing A teams, and then at the last second, I was like talking to my dad, and I was like, he threw it out there first. He was like, yeah, I maybe 16s is a good play. Maybe try to get some confidence going into the U.S. Open. And it was a great decision, honestly. I played 16s, and I kind of wanted that feeling again of feeling the pressure of being the better player in matches, because I hadn't had that
Sure.
in a while playing great players, because I'm playing great players from different countries. It's a different level. And I handled that very well and just kind of rolled through Kalamazoo. So I did very well with that, and I'm very happy with that decision, because I feel like you need to balance your schedule of tournaments where you should be one of the favorites, and tournaments where you're middle of the pack, and tournaments where it's like, okay, you're like lower, this is going to be like, it's a tough tournament. Like I would say for me now, it's that's pro tournaments. That's like where I can you're playing better players and can see your level.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I like that a lot, and it is one of the hardest things to do is to win a tournament when you're the one seed and expected to win, because like you say, you're dealing with some confidence issues, and then you take a step down and maybe step down a level, and then if you don't win that, then your confidence is really struggling. So to put yourself out there on the line like that, it's really impressive to do that and to come through at a big tournament. That's a great thing that you can look back on.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a great story. I mean, we talk with every coach about win-loss ratio for great players, and then you hear every pro that goes pro talk about early on going pro. They're flying all over the world, losing in the first round, and so it is good every once in a while to walk out there and remember, like, oh yeah, I can beat everybody here, right? So congrats to you on that win.
Thank you. Thank you.
So Scott, you want to ask the next one about training?
Yeah, sure. And so, like say right now you're getting ready for Indian Wells. So what is your week, or what does your day today look like in terms of morning, afternoon, match play, fitness, nutrition? Take us through a day, take us through your day.
This week we've been having a little later starts. We've been going at 10 o'clock, 10 o'clock on court, which means I'm getting to the gym about 9, and then I'll work with trainers here and rehab, see if I need to do more to rehab my ab, anything in the morning. I do that for about 15 minutes, and then the rest is a warm up until 10 o'clock, so about 45 minute warm up. And
And
then
tell us about the warm-up. What does that warm-up include?
that's a lot. That's something that I've improved recently. It's a lot more stretching and mobility wise, like I've been doing better with that. Like that's something I didn't realize when I was young you have to do to become a good player, like to take care of your body. So the warm up, it starts with I'll roll out pretty much legs, back, glutes, all that stuff, and then do like mobility work for about honestly like 25 minutes, 25, 30 minutes. That's a big thing, like work on. I'm trying to get my hips looser, ankles a little looser, all that stuff. A lot of mobility, and then I'll go do arm bands and then a little movement before I go on court.
So talk that a lot of juniors warm ups 5 minutes and then here they are playing. Tell
Well, just
us
walk on
what.
court, run around the court, then you're good.
Right. So
Run a while.
if you have a session at 10 a.m., what time do you start the warm up? Based on what you just said, it sounds like about 9:15.
Pretty much. I would say if you can get in a gym or something, if you can get in a gym, oh, I forgot my bike too. Get in a gym, you bike for like 10 minutes, and then 5-10 minutes, and then do mobility, and then bands and warm up, and then movement. I would say that is what you need. It's like I would say those are the four. You warm up your legs, you and then warm on getting loose in the legs. And then warm up your arms, and then little like quick bursts and like sprints and stuff before you go on court. I would say that's
So,
what I do, and that's been good.
what's that, about 45 minutes? Like, give us an amount of
Probably.
time that
It
generally. Yeah.
varies. At tournaments, it's sometimes lower because you don't have as much time, so it'd be like
Sure.
30 minutes.
But the
But
ideal,
like
what's the ideal?
ideal would be, I would say 30 to 45 minutes.
Got it. Yeah, a lot of juniors out there going, oh man, that's a lot of time, right?
Yeah, me, I would say half a year ago or even a year ago. I was struggling with that. Didn't do well enough. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think a great player is really four aspects: the tennis, the mental. You just mentioned the weights, mobility, stretching, and it was funny, we had Manny Diaz on, and he talked about, we asked him what took John Isner to the next level, and he didn't mention anything tennis related. He said he was the most stiff player he'd ever seen when he showed up, and one of the most flexible players when he left. And I thought that was an interesting answer.
Yeah,
and then there's there's nutrition. So two things: talk to us a little bit about your habits in the weight room, actually lifting weights, and then talk to us a little bit about your nutrition. And I don't mean nutrition on the court as you play. I mean, what are you doing after you lift to get the most out of that lift?
Yeah. So USTA is nice in that aspect where they have a very nice gym and good trainers that help me during all my workouts. So like today, for example, I had like a squat complex, different types of squats. So we do weights three times a week. We do Monday, Wednesday, Friday that we do lifts, and we do lower body, upper body, and then like a mixture of both. And which is very good.
So sorry.
And then some core. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you say upper body, lower body, are those, say, one is on Monday, one is on Wednesday, or do them both on the same day?
One's on Monday, one's on Wednesday. Normally there's like a focus. There's like a focus to what you're doing. Yep. And so like today, for example, is legs. We were working more on legs. We did a lot of squats, a lot of RDLs.
So you're lifting weights, and then when you get done lifting weights, what are you doing from a nutrition standpoint? Smoothie, protein, at night, big meal, what are you doing?
Yeah, I'm pretty much always eating. So the meals aren't ever a problem. It's always trying to get as much protein in as you can. But actually, after you lift, like at USTA, it's nice. They have protein shakes, and always try to get one after you lift, or even after you lift and then after at the end of your day as well. Try to do that. And nutrition wise, like at the end of the day, it's about just eating. Like for me, it's about eating a lot. And I'm trying to be better, like because I used to be more poor. At USTA, I'm decently better, like getting the vegetables and fruits in. I just eat a lot of protein. That's what I would say.
Yeah. Got it.
So, and your lifting, is that after you're done hitting for the day?
So we do our lifts. We go 10 to 12 practice, and then we do 12 to 1 fitness. And then we have another 2-hour hit, like 3 to 5 in the afternoon.
Yeah, and there's a lot of research around when, if you're going to lift and then play, you need a break in between to let the muscles kind of rest.
We make sure we have a good break.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's important. Yeah. So USTA has got you a good schedule.
They do, yeah.
And those 2-hour hitting sessions, is one of them drill focused and one of them match play focused?
I would say most of the time, the mornings are more drill focused. It's a lot more drills and like different sorts of movement and live ball, or where you're moving side to side, and then we'll get like fed balls maybe at the end of practice. And then afternoons more of the time are where you play more points, play like some more games and different stuff. Like yesterday, for example, in the afternoon, like we had one court of actually feeding because there were a couple players that were hurt. And then I was by myself. I was the whole time playing points from the server is down love 30 in each service game. And I played about an hour and 20 minutes of that just straight up with a couple players. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, Scott, you want to jump into the recruiting and then we'll go fast speed?
Sure. Yeah. So in case people don't know, you're committed to TCU. We'd recommend that anybody that hasn't listened to our podcast with head coach David Roditi, check that one out, episode 83. But tell us about your recruiting process, and start by maybe saying, you know, how did you narrow down from, I'm sure every college was definitely interested in you, but how did you narrow it down to just a few before you made your choice?
Yeah. So in the first place, you were getting, like, I was getting so many texts that, like, it was kind of ridiculous. So for me, like, and when you take a call, like, I always took a call from pretty much all the coaches at first, unless I knew something and unless I knew something that I didn't like. So I'll take that first call, and pretty much 90% of those calls went great. Like, I was like, oh, I love this coach. It sounds awesome. So for me, I had to, like, do my own research and ask other kids that I know that have visited that school or have gone there, like alumni or people that are actually there now, on reasons why the school is good or bad. I did a really good job of that. Like, I would say an unreal job of that. And then from then on, you have probably about 10 schools or maybe a little less that you like really like. And that's where it gets really hard, deciding where to visit. And for me, there is a couple obvious ones. I only took 4 visits, but I thought I chose 4.
Who were the 4 visits?
Yeah, I chose 4 really great schools to visit. I loved them all. First I visited Texas, then I visited TCU, and then it was Michigan and Illinois.
Okay.
Which were all great schools, different schools. I have only great things to say about all of them. So basically I had to narrow it down. I had to narrow it down to those 4. And then I still had a couple more that I was like thinking of maybe visiting, Georgia. I would say if I had like advice to give to other people that are gonna visit or like gonna go to college, I would try to do as much research on your own as you can, because like just talking to the coaches, like they are really good at making the school sound great, which they are.
That's right.
They are. But it's like, well, you can only visit so many. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and so like, Cooper, so we had Manny Diaz on, we had Verditti, we had Matt Hill from ASU, and after each one, I'm like, I'd love for my kid to go to any of those schools,
because
they are great guys and they are great programs. So it's very tough.
And so, what made you go with TCU?
Yeah, so I ended up narrowing it down, Texas and TCU, and both great schools. It was an unbelievably tough decision, but. I felt really comfortable. There was 2 big factors in what I wanted out of school. One was the development of my tennis and like, who can I think it can get me to the next level? And I really trusted David and Devin in that aspect. And they've had great success in the past with former players. And I felt great with that. And the other big thing for me was what's going to make me the most happy in the day-to-day life. And sure. I felt really, really comfortable with TCU in that aspect of kind of the campus, how it kind of felt and how the tennis team schedule is looking. It was a really tough decision, but in the long run, I felt like I just felt more comfortable there at TCU. And I thought, like, I'm thinking it's a great choice. I'm excited to go.
Yeah. I say you couldn't go wrong with any choice that you made. So that's a good position to be in. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
You were in a good spot where it's like you got 4 employers trying to hire you. You can't go wrong with any of them.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Congrats to you on signing with TCU and having the opportunity to do that. Scott, do you want to go ahead?
One other quick thing on the TCU. Jagger Leach is also signed. Is he the same year as you?
He is. We actually took our visits to Texas and TCU together. He is one of my best friends, if not my best friend. We are really close, and he was it's an extra bonus. Obviously, I'm going to school like for me to what can get me to be professional. But if you have other players and people around you that you like, I mean, it's just an extra bonus. I'm extremely excited that we're gonna get to go to school together. Yeah,
that's awesome. I know your doubles partner from Australia, Max. I don't think he's committed yet. So you guys putting the pressure on him to come to TCU?
Yeah, we're trying to put a pressure on a couple people. Max, he's unreal player. He's looking to go pro like straight away, but we'll see. We'll see. He's keeping his options open. He's not, I wouldn't say, looking right now at college. But we'll see.
But players are the best recruiters. The coaches will make it look good, but nothing like the players recruiting each other.
Actually, me and Jag were on a call with David last night, talking about recruiting, like talking about recruiting, which guys we kind of want. So yeah, we're looking into it.
That's gonna be
Sounds
awesome.
good. Well, let's jump in the fast speed. Scott, you want to just rotate back and forth between the questions?
I want you to go ahead.
All right. So tell us, so these are real quick answers. We're going to ask questions and tell us your favorite restaurant on the road.
I would have to say Chipotle, probably Chipotle.
Chipotle.
I bet
All right, that's
95% of our guests, that's the
back to
answer. It's the
95%.
easiest for the tennis player. It's the
That's
easiest. Oh
right.
man.
That's right. Most used app on your phone.
Either Spotify or Instagram.
Okay.
All right. Favorite tournament you played in could be any level from the time you were five to now.
Australian Open or Wimbledon?
Good choices.
Your biggest rival in the Missouri Valley in the 12s.
Oh, good question.
In the 12s, I would say Declan Galligan. He's a kid from Iowa.
Declan.
Love it. So my child's at Tucker Tennis with Declan. So
Really? Yeah.
I'll make sure he listens to this. I asked him the other day
Yeah.
if he wanted to be on the podcast and he got real excited.
Yeah.
Right, so tell us racket. This is a bunch of them, so let me ask them all real quick. Racket brand.
Babolat.
Weight in grams or ounces.
It's 305, which I believe is 10.8.
Okay, string.
RPM blast.
Tension.
52.
Grip size.
Three. So it's three or four
Four and
and three
three eighths.
eighths. Four
Yeah,
and
four
three
and
eighths.
three eighths. All right, cool. Yeah, I'd love to hear those details. Go ahead, Scott.
All right. Favorite tennis movie or documentary?
Favorite tennis movie. I really like King Richard.
Okay, yeah, that was good.
That is a good one. Favorite non-tennis movie or show?
Let me say The Dark Knight.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Let's see. If you could pick any current pro to play doubles at Indian Wells, who would it be?
Any current flow?
And they have to say yes. So,
Boy, wouldn't it be cool if that actually happened?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I gotta say, Rafa Nadal.
There you
Come on,
go.
Nadal. Hook him up, Nadal. Okay. Anything about your junior career you wish you had done different? By junior career, that goes all the way to 5 years old. So, anything you would change?
I would say maybe playing ITFs a little sooner and caring more about development versus some tournament wins.
Yeah, so we're not so much results.
All right.
All right.
This is gonna be a weird one, but I'm curious. Have you ever been punched in the face?
I have not. I have not.
Okay.
No, which is a very good thing.
I love that question, though.
Yeah.
That's a great question.
I've gotten a lot of black eyes,
Not
but
from
not.
not from fists.
No, not from fists.
Okay.
What advice would you give to your 10-year-old self?
I mean, this is gonna sound cliche, but just have fun. Like, just live life truly.
Well,
Like, I
Scott
would
told me,
say.
and Scott put in parentheses that you can't say that one. So, other
Okay.
than have fun.
Yeah. I would say to like be more open to things I'm uncomfortable with. Like
That's good.
get more comfortable in the uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Ooh, good
I
for
like
you.
that.
That's a good one.
All
right. Well, we went over your daily habits, so we'll go to the next one. But were you ever a ball boy?
I was not. I watched a lot of tennis, but never ball play. Not many tennis tournaments in Kansas City.
Right. Yeah.
Got it. And before I ask this last one, I just want to compliment you. We have a lot of players on that are junior players. You've been fantastic. So we appreciate your openness and candor, but you've also been very professional. So congrats to mom and dad also. They've clearly done a good job.
I have. Yeah. Thank you guys.
So if not tennis, what sport would you have played if you had never found tennis?
Basketball. Basketball.
You're a baller. All right.
I love basketball. Yeah.
So then LeBron or Jordan, best of all time?
Jordan.
There we go. I like it.
Come on. Well, this has been great. Scott, anything you want to say before we wrap it up?
No, this is awesome. I'm looking forward to seeing Cooper, how he does next week in qualifying for the Indian Wells. I mean, that's a huge step up, and it's just a great opportunity. It's like one of those things, sort of the opposite of Kalamazoo, where you have no expectations, and it's all a good experience. So good luck out there, and tell Mari we said hi.
Will do. Thank you guys very much. Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Have a good day.
Whip up my appetite. Don't leave me here high and dry. Oh, I don't wanna jinx it, baby. Can't treat myself better spine. Don't wanna overthink it, baby. It's just treat. Yeah.